The goal of Judaism is not to reject this world, but to sanctify it. Not to deny the pleasures of this world, but to transform them. Not to ignore our urges as sinful or animalistic, but rather to direct them, channel them, through the guidance and obligations of the mitzvot, toward the service of God. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 26, Incense and Sensibility. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Let us begin with an announcement made by scientists in 2017, which I had briefly discussed some months ago in one of my weekly editions of Parsha and Politics. Scientists announced that they had identified one of the ingredients of the incense that was brought daily in the temple. In Hebrew, it was called the ketoret, a word which appears in two separate commandments in the Torah. First, there is the obligation to create the altar on which the incense was brought. Exodus 30, V'yasita mizbeach miktar ketoret, and you shall make an altar for the offering of incense. And then there is the verse, difficult to translate, which describes the actual ingredients, the sacred spices that would lie at the heart of this mysterious ritual. Here is one rendering, Exodus 30, verse 34. And the Lord said unto Moses, take unto thee sweet spices, stacte and onica and galbanum, these sweet spices with pure frankincense, of each shall there be like weight. As I described earlier, the incense was offered every day in the Kodesh, the sacred sphere of the temple. It was brought in the morning and the afternoon, and both the Bible and the Talmud clearly considered the ritual the spiritual high point of the daily service. The spices would be poured upon this altar that was created for the purpose of the ritual. The smoke of the incense would rise directly to the top of the temple, and then it would spread all around so that the sanctuary was suffused with its ethereal scent. It has been celebrated in Jewish memory ever since. And yet, over the centuries, the precise identity of the ingredients has become controversial. And it was in this context that we can understand how fascinating the scientific announcement actually was. The second of the ingredients mentioned in Exodus, shechelet, has often been rendered onika in Greek, which means fingernail. That is exactly what it has also been called in rabbinic Hebrew, tziporan, which is Hebrew for nail, and matched the Greek translation. As I described, the scientists wrote in a fascinating article in Nature magazine that the most logical identification of shechelet, of onika, is an extract from the shell of the murex snail, known as auriculum, because while many possibilities have been put forward for the shechelet, nevertheless, quote, none seem to fit the translation of onika as well as the opercula of neogastropods, which is made of a strong protein similar to the keratin of fingernails, end quote. In other words, the scientists described that they had deduced that a procedure in ancient times extracted from these snail shells something that was refined into an essential ingredient for a sweet-smelling substance. Kirsten Benkendorf, one of the scientists, wrote as follows, quote, a predatory sea snail could be the source of a mystery ingredient in a holy incense recipe detailed in the Old Testament. Murex whelks were just one of many suspected sources, but there was no evidence to support the claim until now. In a paper published today, my colleagues and I report how we captured and analyzed the fragrant chemicals in the smoke of whelk opercula, the trapdoor lid that protects the snail inside the shell. This provides evidence to help establish it as the most likely source of onika, one of four major ingredients that make up holy incense. Defined as fingernail or claw, onika is a Greek translation from the original Hebrew word shecheleth, which derives from a tear, distillation, or exudation. Whelk opercula are a protein exudation, similar to fingernails, and have to be torn from the flesh before further processing. Ancient texts refer to unguis odoratus, sweet hoof, as the shell or scale of snails from the Red Sea that emit a pleasant smell when burned. But shells and opercula do not smell nice when burned. So after detaching the opercula from the flesh of the snail, it has to be processed. Ancient and modern practices include rubbing with alkaline solution or soaking in vinegar followed by strong wine before burning the dried ground powder. In our experiments, she continued, we replicated these procedures using clean acetic acid and alcohol. This helped remove the fishy smell from the opercula before drying and grinding into a powder for chemical analysis. And Benkendorf further writes that the main argument against the identification of sea snail opercula as the onika of antiquity is that creatures such as these were described as unclean animals in the Bible. And she adds, but one particular group of sea snails, the Mericidae or Murex, were highly regarded as a source of Tyrian purple, shellfish purple, and Techelet, biblical blue. In biblical times, these shellfish were the only known source of an insoluble purple dye. The incorporation of purple and blue dyed yarn is prescribed for use in the tabernacle and garments worn by high priests, Exodus 26 and 28, end quote. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, one of the essential elements of the incense, one without which the incense would be invalid, is an ingredient that to many seem to embody the ultimate improper addition to the most mystical rite in the temple. After all, it is extruded from a creature that is treif, shellfish, non-kosher, something that in its original form smells fishy and foul. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, when refined, when properly prepared, and assimilated into the larger arrangement of ingredients, it suddenly helps to produce one of the ethereal experiences in the rites and rituals of Judaism's most sacred site. What are we to make of this, that something purportedly putrid and technically treif, or non-kosher, is transformed into something so sublime, one of the essential sources of this most incredible experience in the temple? What could this possibly symbolize? One possibility is provided by the Talmudic text itself, which notes that another ingredient in the recipe for the incense, one described in rabbinic Hebrew as chelbana or galbanum, was actually foul-smelling even after processing. As an independent substance, it was putrid, but that once it was added to the entirety of the incense ingredients, it actually enhanced the entire cultic concoction. For the rabbis, the ingredients of the incense embodied the collectivity and the communion of the Jewish people. For though we are a mixture of individuals of different levels of spiritual and moral development, nevertheless, we must all be connected to one another in the presence of God in his home. Or to put it differently, the union of the Jewish people when gathered in the temple joins all without dismissing any. But there is another possibility. Don Isaac Abravanel has written of the cloud of incense which rises up, which links heaven and earth, as a symbol of the human soul which spends time here on earth and then returns to the celestial sphere. If so, then we can suggest that the ingredients of the incense, each of which in its own way contributes to the larger ethereal experience, represents distinct aspects of the individual personality. Taken together, the sacred spices embody the human soul. The point, then, is that we have different aspects within us, different emotions, diverse desires and urges. Some philosophical traditions might see some of these urges as inherently negative, but that is not the case in Judaism. Judaism believes that our urges are not to be overridden or exercised, but channeled, directed, and transformed. The goal of Judaism is not to reject this world, but to sanctify it, not to deny the pleasures of this world, but to transform them, not to ignore our urges as sinful or animalistic, but rather to direct them, channel them, through the guidance and obligations of the mitzvot toward the service of God. Judaism, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik once commented, does not dismiss emotions such as anger or even pride as inherently and eternally sinful. Each emotion has its proper place. And just as a seemingly non-kosher ingredient enhances the spiritual experience that is the incense, so too can every aspect of ourselves be channeled toward the sanctification of this world and the service of God. A story I often tell describes Harry Truman showing off the presidential seal to Winston Churchill. Originally, for years, the eagle in the seal had turned its head toward the arrows that it clutched in one of its claws, rather than the olive branch that it clutched in the other. But, Truman proudly said to Churchill, he had instructed that the seal be forever changed, that the eagle's head be turned to the olive branch in order to reflect the presidential preference for peace. And Churchill supposedly responded something to the effect of, "Mr. President, I believe that the eagle's head should be placed on a swivel so that it may be turned as the times require." Judaism tells us, as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik noted, that to everything there is a season. The same can be said for the emotions within us. And it is in choosing how to channel every aspect of ourselves that we become embodiments of the incense, so that what was once and will be again a sacred cultic rite is also an embodiment of our own moral sensibility. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.